From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. On this edition of the Coastline Candidate Interviews, we'll spend the first segment with one candidate for the Wrightsville Beach Board of Aldermen. The remaining two segments will feature candidates running for Brunswick Regional Water and Sewer H2GO, popularly known as H2GO, who have opposing views on whether to build a reverse osmosis plant. Feel free to send your questions now for Rodney McCoy and Brayton Willis to coastline@whqr.org. But we begin today with the race for a seat on the Wrightsville Beach Board of Aldermen. This is a race that has five candidates vying for two open seats. Only one of the incumbents with an expiring term is running for re-election. We will hear from the other candidates for the board in Wrightsville Beach later this election season. Wrightsville Beach is a town in New Hanover County with a population of slightly more than 2,500 people. About 98% of the population is white, with a median household income, according to the 2010 census, of $64,000. Pat Prince has a degree in recreation administration from the University of North Carolina. She's also served as clerk for the North Carolina House of Representatives, and she served on the UNCW Board of Visitors, its Executive Board of Visitors, and the Wrightsville Beach Flotilla Committee. She is currently vice president of the Wrightsville Beach Foundation, and she is now seeking a seat on the Beach Town's board. Pat Prince, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much for having me, and I would like to start by congratulating you on the New Hanover County Commissioners proclaiming September 13th WHQR Day.
Well, thank you very much for that, and
You're welcome.
Are having a big celebration on that day at Waterline Brewing.
You're very welcome.
We are taking your questions now for Pat Prince in this first segment only on this live Thursday show. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Pat Prince, first tell us why you decided to run for this board.
You know, it's there's a couple of reasons. I've always told my girls, there comes a time in your life when you need to show up or shut up. And I felt like it's time for me to show up. I think our board is doing a wonderful job. I want to go in with the attitude of I can work well with this board. I would just like to maybe bring some fresh new ideas. I've had a lot of people say this to me, too. Why are you running? You may as well just beat your head on that wall over there, Pat. So maybe that's the reason I'm running, too.
Welcome to politics.
Yeah, I want everybody to feel like they've got a voice, feel like they're a part of the town, take some new and innovative ideas. And I think we've really got to look forward now. We've got a couple of things happening that we've got to look to the future before we let them happen.
So often when people decide to run for office, it's because there's one issue that sort of galvanized their interest and caused them to say, okay, I'm the person to do something about this. What's that one issue for you?
Well, actually, Rachel, there's more than one issue. I think I've got about three. I can address them individually or however you'd like me to prioritize them.
What's the one thing that sort of pushed you over the edge and made you say, you know, I can really help with this?
I think right now we've got to look at, there's two issues that have not been addressed in well over 7 and 8 years. And if I had to pick the top one, I guess it would be the classification and compensation study for town employees.
How does that come across the radar of a Wrightsville Beach resident?
A few years ago, we lost about 10 police officers. And I have sat down with the police chief, the fire chief, and the town manager. And my question to them was, what's important to you as far as getting your job done, as far as the town? And they all seem to have an interest in this. And I can read you consulting study reasons why it needs to be done, but the bottom line is that you're going to get a better quality of candidates for your jobs, and you're going to get competitive salaries, which is what you've got to have for retention of employees. So I think we need to think about that because we are a growing area. And
so the police department is one of those concerns for you. Has there been high turnover in other parts of the Wrightsville Beach administration?
I don't think as much as it showed up in that area. But I do think, like I say, we need to make sure these guys have a cost of living that they can use, you know, and they need to see that there's a step up, that there's a reason to stay in police, fire, in every level. And this is just something that has not been done I know it hasn't been done in 7 years for sure.
A couple of years ago, there was very little competition for seats mm-hmm. on the board of Wrightsville mm-hmm. Beach. Now there are 5 people seeking 2 open seats. Why do you think the competition has increased so much in this race this year?
I guess I would like to think that people are genuinely interested, whether that be the case or not. But that certainly is my reason for entering. I know another thing. I think we're growing so much. I think there's issues we've got to look at, and hopefully that's a part of the reason that people are running.
Traffic during the summer season, and even beyond the summer season at this point, is a big concern for folks in and around Wrightsville mm-hmm. Beach. There was talk of a land swap between the city of Wilmington and the town of Wrightsville Beach, which would move an ABC store closer to the town. And people are raising concerns about just the impact of traffic in that one area on Wrightsville Avenue. How would you, as a Wrightsville Beach board member, help to manage the traffic situation?
I'm so glad you asked me that because that's my other big area of concern. We are facing 2 large developments that are off the island that are going to have a huge impact on our access on and off the island. Now, I went to the DOT meeting on the 2 proposals for the Eastwood overpass. I personally feel the single point urban interchange is the best choice for the present and the future. And the 2 reasons for that is it allows a left and right access to existing businesses. The other plan does not. And it keeps the flow of the traffic to the beach better in and out because it's kind of a one-way thing, in and out. You're in this one line if you go to the beach. The other thing on the Wrightsville Avenue side, all right, there's no room for error on this. We have, you know, you can't make a mistake here and come back corrected. There's not enough land. We have got to really stay on the developer, and we've got to stay on DOT. My husband's a commercial realtor. He's dealt with these things his whole life. And the developer usually bears a huge brunt of the responsibility of the road development. And so this is something we as a community have to stay on and make sure we don't bear it as taxpayers. So that's a big issue to me, both of those things.
The Wrightsville Beach Board of Aldermen have in place some pretty specific and restrictive ordinances when it comes to developers. The Greater Wilmington Business Journal published a piece last September about the challenges developers face in beach towns. Mm-hmm. And in Wrightsville Beach, for example, the height limit is 40 feet. Mm-hmm. And at one time, a property owner had wanted to build a 50-foot mixed-use structure mm-hmm. at the base of Johnny Mercer's Pier, mm-hmm. but town officials rejected proposals that would have allowed higher mm-hmm. buildings. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I think the height limit is fine. And as you know, Cammon's going through a lot of changes right now. And depending on where you are at sea level, depends on how high you can build, how high you have to be off. The maps are being redrawn. So I just think each individual case has to be assessed. It's not a blanket decision.
So there are cases where you would consider then?
Yes, I think everything has to be looked at. If it's aesthetically and architecturally enhancing, I think you could look at it, yes. And I think we've got to protect those commercial sites that are left on our beach. I think we need to talk to the residents. I think there need to be services on that island so that we don't have to cross the bridge every time we need something. And that's where we need input from people as what you would support What will you support that's going to make it here on this island?
What kind of services do you think are missing at Wrightsville Beach?
That's what I want to hear from people. It's not necessarily my place to make that decision. I have ideas, but it's not my place to make that decision.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're meeting one of the five candidates for the Wrightsville Beach Board of Aldermen. Pat Prince is here today. She's taking your questions during this live Thursday show at 910-343-1138. You can also send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. You, Pat Prince, have also said that providing more dog-friendly spaces is important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
We're a dog town. I mean, if you live at the beach, I couldn't tell you how many people have dogs, the percentage, but it's ridiculous. And if you don't have a boat, you can't take your dog to Masonboro. I mean, we just need a leash space for people to enjoy. I don't think we probably don't have the room for a dog park, but maybe hours, say after 6 o'clock, say 6 to 8, let your dog be leashed somewhere. Just make it a little more dog friendly.
So at this point,
but owners have to be responsible too. Now owners have to be responsible too, and our visitors have to be made aware of that.
Is there an area on the island that you're eyeballing for this right now?
Not necessarily any particular location. And not necessarily.
Do you agree with the current policy on dogs on the beach, at Wrightsville Beach?
I think it kind of has to be what it is.
And tell us what that is.
The no dogs until October, you know, and they have to be leashed. And, I mean, it's just general same rules we've had for years.
Beach nourishment is always a major concern for stakeholders at the beach. The funding for shoreline stabilization is a changing game all the time, challenging at best. Where do you think the lion's share of the funding needs to come from? And if you were elected to the Board of Aldermen, how would you help to facilitate that?
Well, right now, it's coming mostly from the room occupancy tax, and hopefully that's going to continue. 60% of the first 3% goes to renourishment at the town that needs it. We do have an issue of some VRBOs that are not paid, and that's going to have to be addressed. Wrightsville Beach has done an excellent job of putting money in reserve. They have close to probably $1 million in reserve in case we get to a point where we're not getting the funding we need. But there's also been a couple of proposals thrown out should this happen. One was let the room occupancy tax pay for one project per town. The other one, which I find very interesting, is 17.5% of the local costs be split between the county and the beach town receiving it. And what that would mean, like our last project was $8 million. So that would mean that this cost to the town and the county would only be $700,000. So I think looking at ways in the future, should this happen, but I think we need to continue with our room occupancy tax as the major funder of this.
And how do you crack down on those folks who aren't paying it? How do you track it?
Well, I think realtors who handle it are very good. I think they're good about it. I think right now, from what I've been reading, it's citizen input is how this is being caught most of the time. Citizens say, hey, these people are doing this, and word of mouth, this just seems to be the best way right now.
We have a question. Jared from Wrightsville Beach called in and said, Pat Prince, do you plan to lower the speed limit? What do you plan to do about bikers riding in the road as this is unlawful?
There actually, and you can go online and find this, Jared, there's a bike proposal that I came across that was approved in 2009. And I would like to see that revisited. There hasn't been a lot done with that, just a couple of things. Now, some of the things that were approved on that are really not cost-effective, like piers over Salisbury Street Bridge and things. But I do think we need to look at that. I would like to see bikers have to walk their bikes across the drawbridge. I find that extremely dangerous. I would also like them to see them, when they come off the bridge, have to go through the boat ramp and under the bridge. It's very dangerous. I live in Lee's Cut. They come off that bridge and zoom in front of us all the time. So as far as the speed limit, I don't think Lorigant's going to do any good. I think we're going to have to concentrate on enforcement.
Enforcement of the existing speed limit. Just a few seconds left. Briefly, Pat Prince, why? Go ahead.
I have one issue that I do want to mention real quickly that's very important to me. Our parking at the beach, here's another issue that has not been dealt with in over 7 years. We have a contract with Lanier, and this is, I'm not saying Lanier is not doing a wonderful job, but it makes good business sense to me that every 4 to 5 years, this should be bid out to make sure we're getting the best price and make sure we're getting the kind of services that we need. And Lanier comes in with the best price, great, we stay. If not, we need to find out. I know Carolina Beach does this. I've talked to their town manager. So we need to see if we're saving money and getting the best bang for our dollar.
Every few years, just staying on top of that. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Pat Prince, thank you so much
thank
for joining
so
us
much,
today.
Thank you so much, Rick. I appreciate you so much. Thank you. And people, vote, please.
And when we come back from this break, we're going to switch gears to meet two of the six candidates for H2GO's Board of Commissioners. Brayton Willis is next. You can ask your own question during this live Thursday show by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We are switching gears now to the race for one of three open seats on Brunswick Regional Water and Sewer H2GO's Board of Commissioners. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. H2GO is a water and sewer utility in Brunswick County that serves the northeast portion of the county, which includes Leland, Belleville, parts of Navassa, and there are some customers located outside of those municipal boundaries. The utility currently serves about 10,000 water customers, about 6,000 sewer customers, and they say they expect the customer base to double within the next 25 years. H2GO currently buys finished water from Brunswick County Public Utilities, but since 2011, H2GO has worked towards building its own reverse osmosis plant. Constructing a plant with a price tag of more than $30 million is controversial, with opponents concerned the project isn't necessary and would saddle consumers with higher utility rates. Today's candidates are joining us in an order randomly chosen before the show. With us right now is Brayton Willis. Brayton Willis is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. He currently lives in Leland with his wife, and he worked as a wastewater design construction engineer for private engineering firms. As a public health engineer, he oversaw the water and wastewater program in Maricopa County, Arizona. He's also worked as a senior project manager and strategic planner for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and he served on the Planning and Zoning Board in Holden Beach here in North Carolina. Brayton Willis, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And we'd like to hear from you during the live Thursday show. If you have your own question for Mr. Willis, you can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Mr. Willis, I want to get to a listener question first from Jane Doe. She says, you have frequently stated that regionalism is the answer to water treatment for the current water crisis, but what will be the cost and how long will it take for Brunswick County to implement the treatment improvements to remove Gen X and other fluorinated contaminants?
Oh, that's a great question. I am an advocate of regionalism. I am an advocate of community partnerships. I've got 40 years of working with communities all across the United States, utilities, who have often tried to find the most affordable ways, cost-effective ways, to service their customers' needs for water and sewer. Here in Brunswick County, I am eagerly looking forward to their efforts to look at a wide variety of opportunities to treat our water. And I think it would follow right behind Cape Fear Public Utilities' efforts to look at granulated activated carbon, and the other treatment technologies that they're looking at now. So I'm thinking that it's going to be far more affordable to spread the cost of whatever treatment, regardless if it's RO mm-hmm. or if it's granulated activated carbon or polymer-based treatment. It'll be far, far less expensive to our customers to do that on a regional basis because you get more people. You can spread the cost around.
So what you're saying is you're not necessarily opposed to the idea of using reverse osmosis for treatment. You're opposed to H2GO building this plant.
Exactly. The technology is a proven technology, and if it's required here, and Brunswick County decides that it has to be implemented, then we support that. But we do not support it for such a small utility as H2GO.
You've said that Chemours, which is the company responsible for discharging Gen X, this unregulated, potentially dangerous compound into the Cape Fear River, which of course supplies drinking water to hundreds of thousands of people in southeastern North Carolina, you've said they should be held accountable for their discharge of contaminants into the water supply. But some and certainly regulators and government officials now are working to hold them accountable, but that's after the fact. What do you say to people who don't want their drinking water supply in the hands of industry?
Oh, I totally agree. I think Chemours should be held accountable. To me, it is just an absolute injustice. When you think about they draw their water out of the Cape Fear River, use it for their economic benefit, and then return it polluted, that to me is an insult to all of us that live down here downriver. And to take this one step further, Brunswick County yesterday announced that they're hiring a national law firm, and they're going to start chasing these people back up into the holes that they crawled out of.
That's right, but that's after the fact. And so when we're talking about the control over the water supply, I mean, one of the things that proponents of this plant argue is if we have our own plant, we have control over our own drinking water no matter what other companies like Chemours will do. And they will continue. Now, I'm not speaking about Chemours, but industry continuously, that's what happens.
Right now, Cape Fear Public Utilities is testing granulated activated carbon. And I would be surprised if that didn't work out as a potential solution. Granulated activated carbon is an order of magnitude less expensive, and it can be deployed in a matter of months versus waiting till 2019 for a reverse osmosis plant that really is an unaffordable investment, waiting for that to come online.
We've heard from some of the researchers from NC State who've studied the presence of Gen X and the best system to remove Gen X from the water supply. And what we've heard is reverse osmosis is really the only effective treatment for that.
I will say this again. It is being tested as we speak. And if reverse osmosis is the only answer, you would want to have a large customer base to spread that cost and benefit. I mean, I will say this, as I said earlier, I have worked with utilities all across this country, and this is the first time that I've ever seen a utility go in the opposite direction of partnerships and collaboration.
We had a call. Jane from Leland called. She asks, if Brayton Willis is elected, will he work to dissolve H2GO? And if so, what will happen to the sanitary district's assets and debt?
Good question. That's not on our agenda. Our platform is, number one, to reverse all of the actions and activities related to the reverse osmosis plant. The second thing is to go back to Brunswick County, reestablish a strong partnership with them, and negotiate a future wholesale water agreement with them. And then the third thing is to make sure that our employees, the H2GO employees, are getting whatever they need to do the hard job that they do every day. So that question is not on our platform.
Have you detected a shift in public opinion? This has been a controversial project, this reverse osmosis plant, for several years now. And there was a great deal of opposition. Do you think there's been a little bit of a shift since the news of Gen X and other contaminants in the river broke?
To all the people that I've talked to, and I don't want to throw out statistics, but for about every 40 people that I've talked to that H2GO services, one out of 40 is concerned. And that is that when we went out and talked to the community, when we've done this from one end to the other, it is about 40-1 in favor of a regionalized approach, keeping Brunswick County in the mix. Brunswick County is a multi-award-winning water and wastewater utility. They want to continue that service.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're meeting two of the six candidates for H2GO's Board of Commissioners. There are five members of the board who serve four-year staggered terms. The board has three open seats. Right now we're talking with Brayton Willis, who is an opponent of building H2GO's RO plant. You can ask your own question of Mr. Willis during the live Thursday show by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. We had an email from Kirby who wrote, "You say the RO plant will challenge the less fortunate. What do you say to the less fortunate who are being subjected to contaminated water and who will have no immediate solutions provided by Brunswick County?"
Well, I'm going to say this. RO water is the most expensive water that a municipality could consider. If we're going to talk about the less fortunate in our community, H2GO, three members on that board, have not even explored what the impacts of that expensive investment would be on that community. It's just not there. They didn't do it. So what do I say to the people that can afford the water? We're going to do everything that we can to collaborate with Brunswick County to keep the cost at a reasonable level for all of the customers, including those that may be on the other end of the income scale.
If you look at this from a regional perspective, collaborating with Brunswick County, potentially CFPUA or maybe other entities, what would the timeline be on that? At what point would you be able to say to people, we found the solution, we can certify it's a safe drinking water supply and it's being implemented?
Let me say this. Bill Baer, Don Yowsey, and myself, working together as a slate for these three seats, have already begun the process of those discussions, looking at opportunities, looking for those sweet spots where we can partner with not only Brunswick County. We've got Leland, we've got Navassa, we've got Belleville. There are opportunities where a collaboration can produce great results and great cost benefits to all of the people in that area, and maybe even beyond. Maybe we can look at collaborating with the other wholesale customers within Brunswick County.
So what's the timeline on that?
Immediate.
And how long do you think it would take? If the opponents of this RO plant built by H2GO are elected in November, from that point on, how long do you think it would take to have a solution in place, not just negotiated, but built in place and working?
A solution for what?
For the potentially contaminated water supply.
That, again, Cape Fear Public Utilities is testing alternatives.
Right.
When those tests come back, then we'll get a really good idea of what we can do in the time frame. I can tell you that from the research that I've done on granulated activated carbon, it can be deployed far quicker and far less expensive than reverse osmosis. We could probably beat the timeline that they have for the reverse osmosis startup.
Sarah from Leland called in, and she asks, does he think that only one out of 40 people are actually concerned about the contamination in the water? She wants a clarification.
Yeah, that is the number that I was keeping when I was going through. There could be a difference in that, certainly. But those are the numbers, when I talk to the folks, those are the numbers that I was kind of keeping tabs of to see who is in favor and who is opposed.
Warren from Leland asks, do you feel the current H2Go organization should remain as an autonomous entity, or should it become part of a larger provider such as Brunswick County?
We haven't even addressed that. Like I said, in our platform right now, we've got three target opportunities that we're working on, and that is stopping the reverse osmosis plant activities, continued purchase of water from Brunswick County, and making sure that the employees are getting what they need to continue providing the excellent service that they provide.
Do you drink the water that's currently coming out of your tap at home in Brunswick County?
Let me share with you something. As a Marine Corps veteran stationed at Camp Lejeune, I was personally impacted by the water issues there. I currently drink the water coming out of the tap untreated. My wife does, my grandkids do, my children do, my dog does.
Tell us why you're not concerned about the safety of that water supply.
22 parts per trillion. To me...
You're talking about Gen X.
Gen X,
but
yeah.
There are lots of other chemical compounds that we were discovering in that water supply.
I think that Carl Antos has talked about 1,4-dioxane. That's non-detectable coming out of the treatment plant. So to me, that's not an issue. These other strange compounds that keep on popping out of the woodwork, we'll address those one at a time, and we'll take a look at those one at a time. It could be that granulated activated carbon can eliminate that. And if it does, great, we got a bonus. We'll move on. But we'll take them one at a time. The surface water here is critical for 300,000 people and businesses. And we have to look at it from the regional approach. It's mandatory.
And that's our time, Brayton Willis. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate the conversation.
When we come back from this break, we'll meet Rodney McCoy, who is running for the H2Go board, a strong supporter of the RO plant. You can ask your own question on this live Thursday show by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn with the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. H2Go serves about 10,000 water customers in the northeast portion of Brunswick County, about 6,000 sewer customers. The utility is moving towards construction of a reverse osmosis plant so it would have an independent water source and control of its water quality. H2Go currently spends about $1.8 million a year on finished water from Brunswick County Public Utilities. The RO plant, however, is controversial. Opponents have organized a couple of years ago, and of the five current commissioners on H2Go's board, at least two of those members are opposed to construction of the plant. Today, we're meeting two candidates for that board. There are six candidates in total vying for three open seats. On a previous discussion, we met two others seeking a seat on H2Go's board. Rodney McCoy is a Leland resident, a business owner, and he is running in support of the reverse osmosis plant. Rodney McCoy, welcome to Coastline.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
And you can ask your own question of Mr. McCoy during this live Thursday show by calling us at 910-343-1138 or by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Rodney McCoy, one of the complaints that we've heard repeated about the pro-RO folks is that they're not listening to the approximately 900 residents who've signed a petition saying, hey, please wait until after the election. This thing is moving too fast, and we're concerned about the potential cost.
Actually, it's been studied for at least 6 years. As far as the 950, you don't compare it to 10,000. It's 900 people compared to 25,000 residents.
So do those 900 people not matter?
No, they all matter. But they're located, all the signatories, primarily within a very small geographic area and are not widespread at all. I feel that there's widespread support for the H2GO and for clean, contaminant-free water.
And why do you personally, you're not an incumbent, you would be, if you were elected to this board, this would be a new seat for you. Why do you support this plan? Why do you want to be on the board?
I was asked to be on the board, and the more I studied it, I agreed with it. But my concern is clean water. You know all the stories about Gen X and its related products. I've got family, I've got small family, friends, and I want safe water for them. I want safe water for everybody in the area.
Why?
Leland and H2GO is going to be a leader in actually solving our problems.
Why were you approached to run for this? What in your background would make you good for this board?
My whole professional career has been related to water and wastewater. So I'm very familiar with how to treat it. I've been involved in the design and providing equipment to RS Systems in Mexico, University of South Carolina, and numerous other places.
You've provided equipment to reverse osmosis plants.
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
And what you own your own business now. Explain to those of us who are not experts in this area what exactly your business does. What do you do?
My primary customers are industrial, and it's liquid handling, which is pumps, filtration systems, and repair and troubleshooting, that sort of thing, primarily with an industrial base.
And industrial, what sorts of?
Rendering, chemicals, poultry, to name a few.
We had a call from Janet from Ivanhoe. She's asking, could the RO plant be a false sense of security? Can it really eliminate all the contamination?
The source water itself is contaminant-free. So you aren't eliminating anything. The RO system is purely to remove some salt. So there's none to eliminate from the get-go.
So you're talking about starting to draw water instead of getting it from Brunswick County Public Utilities, drawing it from an aquifer.
Absolutely.
Which is a different source. That's not what H2GO is doing now.
Correct. They're buying the water right now.
So if that's a pure water source right now, why do you have to build a $30-plus million plant to purify it?
The level of salt in the aquifer is roughly equal to the amount of salt in a can of chicken soup. However,
low sodium or regular?
I'm not sure, but per EPA regulations, that salt level is too high. So the RO system is to remove the salt in order to make it meet the EPA regulations for salt.
And there's not a cheaper way to remove the salt?
No, it's not.
That's reverse osmosis.
Yes. Now, the neat thing about it, when you remove it from a brackish system, it's much, much less energy intensive than it is if you actually dealt with seawater.
The biggest concern around the building of this plant for opponents is the cost. Opponents are concerned about saddling 10,000 people with a $30 million plus project. What do you say to those folks who say, you're going to make my rates increase by who knows how much?
I would say two things. They've had professional analysis look at that, and there will be no rate increase. If you wanted to bring it to a personal level, do you want to buy your house or do you want to continue to rent it? Another way, if you remove the numbers and change the zeros, had you rather pay $3,400 in 20 years or somewhere between $3,600 and $6,000 in 20 years if you continue to buy it.
One of the current commissioners, Jeff Gerken, who we know is an opponent of the RO plant, writes, the projections that were handed to commissioners at the last meeting by H2GO management show that in 2020, the first full year of RO plant operation, the debt service would be nearly $1.7 million. And the operating costs would be just under $1 million. That's a total of about a little more than almost $2.7 million. H2GO estimates the cost of continuing to buy their finished water from the county in that year would be only a little more than $2 million. So that sounds like a pretty big discrepancy for a customer base of 10,000.
Well, I have to go back to the professional analysis. We said that there will be no rate increase. And actually, as part of my justification, how much is the life and health of a child worth? Personally, I think it's worth quite a bit. So if you have numbers like that, I'm still concerned about the health and safety of the children and the pregnant women and the pets in the area.
Jane writes, opponents to H2GO's RO system state H2GO has never operated an RO water plant. How difficult is it to operate an RO water plant?
Well, me and you could go and learn how to operate an RO plant in about 30 minutes.
Well, speak for yourself.
It's fully automated. The RO systems in the buildings I've been into, there's actually nobody there. It's taking care of itself. It's fully automated. If it has a problem, it gives you a phone call at the house even. There's 300 million people in the worldwide that's using RO water in 130 different countries. So it's not rocket science at all.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're meeting two of the six candidates for H2GO's Board of Commissioners. There are five members of the board who serve four-year staggered terms. The board has three open seats, and right now we're talking with Rodney McCoy, who supports building a reverse osmosis plant. You can ask your own question during this live Thursday show by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Colette asks, can you explain a little about RO and how it works?
An RO system is just mechanical components, really. It's cross-flow filtration where you put pressure on it and you push the clean water through. The bad guys stay on the opposite side and they get flushed down the drain. It's really a pretty basic system that everything is commercial components. It's not black box at all.
Some of the opposition coming from the town of Leland about this plant says people haven't really explored less environmentally impactful options enough first. And if this plant was built, it would be dumping gallons and gallons of briny wastewater into the Brunswick River, which is a fish nursery.
It has been fully explored. As far as the effluent is concerned, the brine concentration would be roughly 8 to 10,000 parts per million. Seawater is 35,000 parts per million. The U.S. Geologic Survey at Eagle Island, the salinity at that point varies between 27,000 and 500 parts per million, depending on tides and water and rain. So you're dumping essentially exactly what is in the river already. There's studies show that there's absolutely no impact at all.
If two of the people who are opponents of this plant are elected, then there would be a majority on the Board of Commissioners that oppose this plant. What would you do then?
I'd probably cry. It's so important for the health and safety of our residents to have contaminant-free water, and this is the only practical solution that's currently in process anywhere in the area.
You know, we've heard from a couple of supporters of the RO plant that the analysis has been done and there's no concern about supporting this plant financially. But we all know that analyses aren't perfect, and we also know that costs tend to increase. The cost of this plant has already increased from the time that it was first explored to now, and it's increased significantly. How can you just say to people, make blanket statements, your bills aren't going to go up, don't worry about it?
I have to rely on the professionals, and that was their analysis.
We have actually Sterling from Leland. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air, Sterling. What's your question?
I think you just asked it. He answered it. Well, my question was, well, first of all, I'm for the RO plant, but I don't understand how taxpayers won't, why our water bills won't go up.
Go
and
ahead.
I know he says that the professionals, say that. But
I understand. I'm the newbie too, so I'm not privy to as many as the numbers, so I have to rely on the professionals. However, our payments for the debt service is going to be constant. If we continue to buy the water from the county, you're going to have routine increases, and that could depend fully on inflation, what those increases could be.
Well, I think, like I said, I'm for it, but I think it's important to be able to explain to the folks why is it that our bills won't go up.
Absolutely. But consider how much money you spend on bottled water because you feel there's too much goop in the water then.
Sterling, are you buying bottled water?
I've been buying water. I moved in here 12 years ago. I never liked the water down here. I've been buying bottled water for 12 years. I pay 30 cents a bottle, 30 cents per gallon for the water.
All right, Sterling.
37 cents. It's a reverse osmosis water.
Thank you so much for that call, Sterling. There has been other opposition. I've alluded to the town of Leland's opposition. Brunswick County's Board of Commissioners has said slow down. And even at the state level, Representatives Deb Butler and Frank Eiler, this bipartisan team, sponsored a bill that it got stuck in committee, didn't go anywhere, but it would require an economic impact study of a different kind, I believe, by the local government commission before such a plant could be built. What do you make of all these entities saying, hey, slow down? This is a big investment for not a lot of users.
The town of Belleville gave a unanimous endorsement. So, and
that's a tiny municipality, which is part of the customer base, certainly.
Absolutely.
But the town of Leland is larger.
The town of Leland, as well as the county, looks at H2GO and being a real viable entity and also being a cash cow. They would like to have it under their wing as opposed to being independent, and this is a method they're using to try to do things like that, in my opinion.
And Jeff writes, H2GO increased their price twice in 2013 and 2014 to pay for this plant, and they've been charging their customers ever since.
That's before my time. I'd be better off not answering that.
Okay. Why does H2GO, this comes from DW, not want to work with Brunswick County and the rest of the region to ensure that everyone has affordable, clean water? In other words, why not do the regional approach?
H2GO would be glad to work with anybody. But we would be responsible for our 25,000 residents. We wouldn't be, and that's who we have to address clean water for. If there's a way to partner with other people, it'd be wonderful. However, the term regionalization also implies that the fix would be 5, 10, 20 years down the road, which is not acceptable for anybody with any common sense.
We had a question. Bob from Wilmington asks, are there any new plans from new people? And I'm not sure what – does that mean anything to you, Rodney McCoy?
No, ma'am, it really doesn't.
There are other RO plants operating in the state of North Carolina. Are there lessons that we can learn from those plants and potentially financial mistakes that we can avoid?
Every time you build something, you learn. Like I said, there's 300 million people in the world using RO water. One example I would like to give is Emerald Isle has an RO system. In the winter, the RO system supplies all the water. In the summer, it's blended. The start of every summer, the local residents call and complain because they don't like the quality of water once they start blending it. Also, if you notice any website with any utility that has RO system is bragging about the RO and the quality of water that you receive from the RO.
So we had a question. What would you say to folks who are insistent upon using RO to solve this problem as suggesting to them to put their own plant or their own, I suppose, in-house system instead of spreading that cost to the 10,000 people, many of whom say they might not be able to?
The only in-house system is a stopgap. I would consider that for myself also, but it's, you know, we're looking at solving the region's problems, not an individual household.
And that's this edition of the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Rodney McCoy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks also to Brayton Willis and Pat Prince and Technical Director Ken Campbell and Associate Producer Rachel Keith. Join us on the next edition of the Coastline Candidate Interviews when we meet three of the candidates for Wilmington City Council. That's next Wednesday at noon. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.